Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to the Explicit Measures podcast with Tommy, Seth, and Mike. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, gentlemen.
How's it hanging?
I'm tired. I'll just tell you right now. It's been a week. I
would agree with those sentiments.
I just feel like things have been just moving super fast.
What energy we are going to bring to the show today. That's what you're saying, right?
Exactly. What energy are we bringing to the... You know, Mike's not bringing much energy.
Aren't you excited now to listen for the next hour?
I feel like March went very fast. I feel like April is going incredibly fast.
Oh, yeah.
What the heck? Things are just busy right now, which is good. I'll take it. I'd rather be busy than not busy.
We're getting 80 degrees. I mean, we have like, it's springtime in the Midwest.
Man.
Wait, is that what the weather is down there in Chicago?
It's going to be. Today
it's going to snow tonight.
Right after the 80 degrees, then it'll snow.
I wouldn't be surprised. Awesome. So we got a main topic for today is kind of a question. Well, you know, does it feel like too much? Is there too much going on inside the Power BI ecosystem? So with our favorite blogger, I guess we talk about this guy more than anyone else. Kurt Bueller comes out with another great article. Does it feel like too much? All the new things, all the new shiny bells and whistles that comes out of Fabric. What's going on? Are we overwhelmed? So that's going to be our main topic for today. But before we jump into that, we have a number of just kind of announcements. There's been a lot going on, a lot of announcements from Microsoft, great things that I think are coming down the pipeline. But let's talk about some of those things. The Fabric Day One Conference keynote is now available and live online. I've been talking with clients about some features, particularly, we talked in the podcast around a couple features, the Metrics Hub and the Task Flows, potentially. But these are features that we've only kind of seen in demo in the main session. There's no like videos outside of this. There's no documentation yet. There's nothing out and around about these other features yet. So, and all we know is what Microsoft announced at the Fabric conference. So, also pretty interesting. Anything that stood out to you in this April announcement? That's your cue to say something.
not an absolute ton, but I think that I still love seeing all the visual improvements that they're continuing to make, to refine, and continued work going towards that, because it's just easier, better refinement for the tool as we go along.
Some slight PowerPoint too, and actually by PowerPoint I mean three different PowerPoint updates.
Yeah, still not sure who's using those features, but okay. I'll let it slide.
Oh, Mike. There's a ton of updates already in April. And by the way, I want to say kudos to the April team, for the Microsoft team. I'm going to do a slow clap because we're getting really closer with the on object interaction.
Oh, what?
Yeah. Like
That's quite a tone change, Tommy.
We're heading in the right direction. Again, you got to know about any BI professional. We're all about efficiency.
I agree with that.
Clicks, how can I automate? How can I make things more straightforward? And I'm finding the workflow to be kind of getting there. A lot less frustration. And I don't want to use the word yet, but I'm kind of enjoying it.
Well, I will echo that sentiment, Tommy, because for the first time I was in desktop doing some workaround stuff. And well, I always do work and stuff in desktop, but I had for some reason turned off those features or turned off the new on editing object experience. And I kind of missed a couple things. There was like, I can't find, again, it's this concept of like, I've been, so when they turned on the feature, I was like, I'm going to learn how to use it. I'm going to turn it on. I'm going to get used to it. And so I just decided that was what I was going to do. And so I'm hitting the moment after, I don't know how many months it's been out, 6 months or so.
I think it's been a year, man.
Maybe it's a year. I've gotten to the point where when I turned it off, I felt like, wait, this doesn't feel right. I can't find some features. And I will say this, of anything that I like to use or edit, I do like double clicking the visual and changing the title and centering it all by using the visual itself. That to me, that feels really natural. Mm-hmm.
Well, I just like that they have the pains. We love pains. I mean, we're a pain people.
We enjoy the pain.
Excellent. That's a shirt. That's a shirt.
I enjoy the pain. I just have literally like a nonstop shirt.
I live for the pain. P N E.
On your shirt.
Anyways, folders.
Anything else that stood out to you? Folders. Okay.
In mobile too. Yeah.
Two things here around folders, right? One, are folders so hard to implement that they need to be in preview? I mean, come on. However, I did find a bug. So it's probably not a bug. It's probably as it's been designed. It just has a little bit of trick when you deploy things. So my understanding is if you create like notebooks or reports and you put them in a folder, when you deploy them in a deployment pipeline, the deployment pipeline automatically puts them in the correct folder and keeps the folder as you deploy the pipeline. However, when a lakehouse is deployed, that is not deployed the same way as a report or semantic model. And my understanding is a lakehouse is deployed by moving the lakehouse from one environment to the other. And then the default semantic model and the default SQL endpoint or SQL analytics endpoint, those are created after the fact. So you can put lakehouses into your development folders or in your dev workspace, and the lakehouse will stay in there and the semantic model and the default data set. However, when you deploy that to the next environment, there is no, like it does the deploy, but when it automatically creates the semantic model and the default report, the SQL endpoint, it creates them at the root level of the folder and not in the folder. So it seems like a bug, like there's something there that's like, it doesn't quite deploy correctly going down the pipeline, but I mean, they work great when you're in the context of a workspace. So that I do love.
So and this, I, you know what, there's a little more complications than your normal folders. And I was going to say, Microsoft, Satya, Arun, I think you're the company who invented folders. And if it wasn't you, it was your greatest competition. So, but yeah, that makes sense. I mean,
it's in preview. It's in preview.
It's in preview. It's in preview.
It's in preview.
Folders in preview.
There may be some bugs with folder. Anyways, I thought that was kind of funny. Do really enjoy them. Already finding great value from organizing things using folders. If you haven't seen them, check them out. They are available. When you use the drop-down menu to add new things, you can add folders, and then you can right-click on an object and move it around. Wow. It's so helpful.
Yeah. And I think we're seeing another good application of Copilot. Something that this is where Copilot's really, I think, going to be helpful. So we can enhance Q&A with Copilot-generated linguistic relationships. And I think these are the types of things where I think BI professionals have never had a grasp on. And I see Seth's face, which to me is kind of proven my point, because this is not something I think any BI professional, the only thing that I've ever seen about linguistic relationships is Lingo back in the day.
Yeah. And that's why I'm making the face, because I'm fairly certain we did talk about this. Probably in the teens of our episodes a long time ago.
Yes.
So were we the only ones that ever talked about it? Probably. But that's why the face, right? Like, so it gets heavy really quick, right?
Yeah.
Around essentially tagging parts of your model, ensuring that, you know, the Q&A, natural language Q&A, can pick up the right things. And this kind of just dovetails into our conversation around like how AI really requires a lot of this. So is Copilot going to help build out something, you know, build out this schema? It's heavy testing to go in and see how, like if the value is there, but it still requires you to go in and add all the aliases or what, I forget the word is right off the bat, but yeah, it's a lot of work, and I don't think I've ever seen somebody effectively using it. So if this points us or puts us more towards the direction, or is this just slapping Copilot on? I don't know.
I mean, if it does work, this is a perfect example of our conversation on Tuesday, our previous conversation about AI and the future of consulting, because these are the exact types of situations
where the right steps forward. Sure.
Right. Right. If it works.
But at the same time, like, I'm not going to say I'm right, but the same parts that it helps with still require parts from humans. Mm-hmm. And that's the categorization or the point the AI in the right direction. Because without that, it doesn't know what to do. And I think ultimately that's ultimately like how, like collectively we are training AI to the point where, yeah, it'll take over. But why? Because we're telling it all of the important stuff, right? And but right now, I don't think it's there.
And I will agree with you because, or I'll say you're right because I agreed with you Tuesday. So by essence, I'm right also. So yes.
I mean, I here's what I'll say. If I think about like my workflows and where I'm using Copilot, any kind of AI thing that I'm using right now, where does it find, where do I find the most value from it? I find the most value when I'm writing code, when it's like very specific things. There's a potential right way to get something. If it doesn't work, if the code doesn't run, it doesn't work. I also finding great value in, so yesterday I demoed the PBIP format and what went deep dive on the PBIP format for our class. Mm-hmm. It was great. And what I realized was I have Copilot in VS Code and I can open up an entire Power BI file project inside VS Code. I can highlight the DAX syntax right inside the editor and say, please explain this DAX to me. And it will give me like a two paragraph thing that says, here's what the answer is. So I would imagine if I did a little bit better job on prompting, I could have a prompt that just says, write a 10 word, 15 word description on what this DAX does. And I could have all the, I mean, literally it's copy paste stuff, and documenting your model will be so much easier when you can just highlight bits of code and say, explain this, you know, write a business user definition for what this means. That makes sense to me. And I think that's where I find a lot of value. I've also been using the Teams. I think there's like a Teams Plus or a Teams AI generated thing too as well. So I'm paying for that one as well. And it is interesting. It does catch a lot of the context of a video call using the transcription and things. However, it does catch some words that are funny. So I was saying the word TMDL, T-M-D-L, a lot. Sure. And so it kept trying to make it like a word or a name, like T-I-H-M-D-L, A-L or something like that. It kept trying to spell the word TMDL, and I was trying to say it accurately enough. But it is funny. It does get some words wrong. And so if you blindly follow the AI and just say, look, here's my meeting, this is my summary notes, I'm going to just use them verbatim as is, it gets some stuff wrong. It's not 100%. And so you do have to read it and say, okay, what of this is actually real? And what, you know, so even when the AI does generate things, I feel like right now I'm still having to do a little bit of interpretation because I was in the meeting and I could understand like what was going on there.
Maybe the problem here, Mike, is, you know, you should be saying TMDL.
I was about to say.
Right?
Maybe it's TMDL.
Well, and I can't blame Copilot. I mean, you're talking about Fabric, and it probably thinks you're saying Thimble. So it's like, oh, well, this makes perfect sense.
Oh, yeah. I've linked all the language model words for sewing. So
it's a sewing meeting. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a sewing meeting.
I have been impressed with Copilot and Teams. Like some of the, like if you ask it for the action items, if you ask,
it's
like
getting good.
Calls out people by name in the meeting.
Yes.
But what I haven't done is a comparison of, to your point, Mike, and what I need to is, Can I take a summary and those actions and give it to somebody who wasn't in the meeting? Because it makes a ton of sense because I was in it. Right. But I don't know if there's enough there that it would shortcut me not having to pass along like the recording of the video or something.
Yes. Where I think the value kind of comes from, so here's where I think it should go, in my opinion, right? And this is free advice for the video people building AI things. You know, this one's for free. Your million dollar idea for free here. I think it would be really nice for you to see the summary. And then inside the summary, you have like little excerpts or items inside the summary where you click on them. And it should speed you to the portion of the video that has that topic or conversation around it, right? So if the words of the AI doesn't quite make sense, get me to where the information is quickly. And then I can just listen to, you know, 5 minutes of the video. Get the context. Oh, they were talking about this. That wasn't clear based on the words.
If it's recorded.
Microsoft should just buy if it's recorded. Yeah. There's two services I actually subscribe to. I've been testing, and they do exactly what you said. You say it's
there. You go.
You actionize. You click
Microsoft Firefly.
Yeah. There you go. You know the best part I'm really enjoying with Teams. I'm a folder guy with Outlook. The amount of automated rules I have for where people go and
it's true. How I organize. I can see that.
But the problem is usually a lot of Outlook things usually rely on things being in your inbox. where you get the notification. You can ask teams, hey, what happened? Give me a summary of my emails yesterday. It finds all the relevant folders and all those relevant emails. Now, some of them are like, wow, hey, subscribe to this service that, you know, Jim talked about. I don't know, Jim, but there's a lot. Actually, I'm asking teams every morning, like what occurred yesterday with all my emails. So that's pretty nifty.
Interesting. I didn't know you could do again. But this is the stuff that's frustrates me about like the AI. So I'll say one of my big frustration is I don't know what it can do. Like you say this, I'm like, that seems useful. Where is that prompting inside the Teams or my Outlook or what? Like, where's the prompts that it's saying, hey, did you, like, here's people. Like, I'm gonna say it this way: the AI has data, right? It. I know Microsoft's trying to keep your data secure, but there's got to be a way for them to generalize things. Like, hey, everyone's using these kind of prompts, or this person's using this prompt over and over again. Maybe this is something we should tell people about. Like, this is a good way to prompt it without giving away specific company data and stuff. So like in the morning, maybe the AI should show up in Teams and be like, hey, here's some common prompts. Here's some common prompts people use in the morning. And you just hit the prompt and boom, you get the information out of it. So, and then you start finding things that you like. And then I feel like at some point you're gonna need like automated prompts, right? In the morning, you're like, give me my summary. And then it knows the context. It's morning, it's time. I'll read through the emails. Did anything happen? Like, what's important?
And Microsoft, if you're listening, don't say, oh, well, there's Copilot Labs. No, that we need something a little better than that. There is something they're working on towards that. It's to the direction that you want. Not there yet.
I still think we're early days here. We're still early days. It's going to get better over time. All right, let's go back to any other announcements. So we have the April Power BI blog. So it's the blog from powerbi.com. The main keynote is there. I would highly recommend watch the keynote. It is quite long. It's like a 2-hour keynote, but it's a lot of good stuff and a lot of things that are very new and coming directionally what's going on. So I would highly recommend listen to the Fabric conference day one keynote, which was really good. Anything else, Tommy? You have continuous slideshows for Power BI reporting add-in. Okay.
Highlight.
Fine. Whatever. anything else we can talk about? Anything, please?
Anything. Did anyone mow a lawn yesterday? Anything?
I didn't see anything else that was other. Copilot pane in preview, I guess. That's the other one that was kind of out there.
Copilot in desktop.
Interesting thing, though, when you use Copilot in desktop, you do have to attach a workspace that is linked to the appropriate subscription to get the Copilot inside desktop. So, you know, a workspace needs to have an F64 or higher in order for that to work inside your desktop. And I'm assuming it has to be a workspace you have access to.
I don't want to nerd out, but I have the ability. I'm running 27 local language models on my computer at any time, right? And I can do it on my computer. Just give me the access to run Olama or something, and I can connect rather than we're using my own capacity. And I just want to try this. There's so much to try out that I want to connect to Power BI. And that's my nerd out kind of thing. And people may not know what I'm talking about, but man, it's desktop. Make it run on desktop. Use my computer's RAM. And let me run Copilot.
You have a very odd machine, Tommy, though. Like your machine is going to be very geared towards anything large language modeling anyways. I don't think everyone's Microsoft Surface laptop is going to be able to handle these models that we're going to need to have running inside desktop if it's going to run.
I love Alex's comment. What was everyone's favorite feature and why was it Power Query and Paginated Report Builder? You're right. They did
got me there.
Big changes. one of the things.
Something's just dying.
Oh yeah, that.
The wordplay there is awesome. One of the it did prompt something in my head though. Like they expanded the in Paginated Reports, they expanded the number of emails that can go out through the automated subscription.
You were asking about that.
1,000.
Whoa,
it's like 1,000 now.
Okay. Yeah.
So that was
we were asking about that earlier, like this in preview. Is it still in preview? Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's still in preview, but they're scaling up.
Mm-hmm.
That's nice.
Much more usable, there. For sure.
Much more usable. I would agree with that one.
I think we need to vote a Power Query patch data. That's going to be a whole topic. That's actually pretty cool. But
good recovery.
That should actually be our new episode, our next episode. Why you love go. Power Query and Pagination Report Builder? Why is that? Why you love that?
Well, let me change the agenda.
Change the agenda.
It's fun.
All right. With that, let's get into our main topic of the day. If you guys feel like that's okay, does that sound like a
good enough
to transition? All right. Let's jump into our main topic of the day. We'll throw down the article here. Power BI, what's new? Does it feel like too much? From Kurt Bueller. So we'll put the article there, link in the chat, in just case you want to follow along. This is the article we're going to talk about. Tommy, just give us a kickoff here. I know you've got a lot of kind of questions here around the rapid evolution of BI and things. Maybe just give us a quick summary of the article and kind of where Kurt's going with things, and then we'll take it from there.
I think the last 20 minutes are a perfect introduction to really what the article's real true heart is. We've been talking about updates for just the last week, and it took us 20 minutes. This article was written in October by Kurt, and he's already saying with the eventful year that 2023 was, Fabric, ChatGPT, Copilots, how in the world can one person feel like they're on top of it or keeping on top of it? So there's an absolute feeling of, if you're in this space, being overwhelmed with the pace, the volume of announcements, not just the announcements, but, and again, in our space, to be on top of it, to feel skilled in it, experienced that you can work and utilize the tools, the platforms, the services. How do we do this? And Power BI has always been overwhelming. Kurt says that in the article. Completely agree. But it's like we already were trying to run a sprint or run a race, and then someone just invented the car, and now we have to keep up with the car. And that's really, I think, to me, the heart of the kind of the conversation in Kurt's content in his article.
I agree with that. I think that's a good summary of kind of where things are going. There is a lot of changes. And interesting, I feel like maybe it's... So I hear your comments around there are a lot of changes coming, and I'm one who kind of runs towards technical things anyways. So I'm less scared of it, and I've been very encouraged by the direction of things. Again, I've kind of been saying this for a long time now. I feel like a lot of what we've been getting into is there is a ton of really valuable new technologies that are coming to the normal business user. By default, you'll have access to a lot of extra things. So to me, this has been really the grow-up story of Power BI. Look, we have all these rich, you know, Azure-based tooling things. We can now give you all those tools directly inside a UI or a single place. You pay for one thing, you get all these different things out of the box. So I really like this. I do feel like from an administration and governance standpoint, it's going to get a lot harder. So yeah. That's just my perspective on that one. But I'm very excited about it because I've been doing Spark, Notebooks, Lakehouse Development, Medallion architectures for 5-6 years now. So to see this stuff now finally arrive in an easy to use way inside Power BI, I'm extremely excited about it.
But I think that's only 30% of really what you think about the whole 2023 or the last 4 to 16 months, maybe. I think everything with Fabric is probably 40% of what's going on. I mean, man, like, yeah, it's great that we have everything integrated with Fabric, but our conversation on Tuesday was about, it was going to be AI and Fabric. The majority of the conversation was we naturally came to AI. We're dealing with AI. You're dealing with Fabric. And I agree with the administration side. I'm taking this just from the role that we've been for the past 9 years, the BI professional, right? And how in the world do you, in a sense, I don't even say become skilled and experienced, but just keep up with all of it. And what is important?
I agree with this one. And I think later on in the article, Kurt does a good job of, you know, kind of saying, okay, what can we do? Right. So he has a couple of steps, you know, step one, there's like a, is it four steps?
Before we go, what can we do? Can I pose a question?
Let's do that.
Yeah.
Because we all know the volume of changes are coming rapidly, and that is the problem. Like there are challenges that we're facing. We talk about, I think, some of them that Kurt does as well here, where like, how do we implement them? We can dive through the different things. But the question I have is, if we think about how software products in the past, pre-Power BI, at least in the Microsoft ecosystem, were deployed, It was much slower cadence, heavy tech. There was a cycle of announcements and marketing. Do you feel that the strategy and it's a real time thought, so I haven't like analyzed it myself, but has the strategy of how these features and updates changed to be adapted to the speed at which these features and updates are being spewed? Like, because it almost feels to me sometimes that the spigot is just on and information just pouring out in an inconsistent or hard to digest way for everybody that's like, oh my gosh, like 500 fabric features were all like loaded through this week. And yes, they're bucketed into their technologies, but is that enough for the wide audience to grok it? Or maybe that's where the training site is helping out. I don't know. Yes. It's like it just seems it's a question that is may go nowhere.
Well, no, I think it's a very valid question. Let me give you some things that I see Microsoft doing right now, and maybe this tells you or shows their cards a little bit, right? They are now pushing the DP600 exam pretty heavily for people. And you'll also notice there's a whole bunch of free vouchers being given away from Fabric Conference and other coupons across the internet around, hey, if you do these Microsoft Learn elements, you get a free coupon to go take the test. So because Microsoft is so incentivized to get people certified in the DP600 exam, that is allowing people to spend time. That does two things to encourage people. One, it gives you kind of a certified something from Microsoft that says, look, I got my stamp of approval from Microsoft. Here it is. In addition to that, it's also pushing people towards learning materials to go, okay, well, if I'm going to go study for this exam, because that's what I want to achieve, I need to go learn the different tool pieces. So if Microsoft themselves are trying to incentivize people to go get exams and cover the knowledge gap that they themselves are producing, right? To me, that already speaks to your point, Seth. Like, it affirms to me, yes, there is a lot going out there. Yes, people don't know what to do with things and they need help getting through this new pattern. Like, this whole concept of like Git integration and using it with workspaces and what are the patterns there? I've heard many times people talking through and saying, yeah, this is not that clear, but it wouldn't be for a business user because we're not used to doing things that way. We always, we build and prod, right? That's what we do. And it's all inside a knowledge skill set of Excel and maybe some Power BI models that hang around. So what we're doing is we're really opening up the world to a lot of new tooling that has traditionally been gated by IT. And I think it's natural that they're going to want to, be overwhelmed and have to educate.
I'm going to take that a little a different direction. I may disagree with you. I think you got to start with the organization because the organization's usually with an FTE that dictates the skill that someone in this role is going to use, right? If you're not using Power BI, you're probably not going to be a Power BI expert, or if you're not using certain tooling. I think with this spigot of information, which I really do like that analogy, there's a lot less direction for organizations on where they're devoting their money and where they devote what they're buying, what services they're doing. To your point, when there's this conference, hey, the box is coming in 3 months. Okay, well, we're going to begin to go in this direction. Well, this spigot of information coming from multiple areas, the user's only going to know, right? Like, I mean, we can learn individually on our own on weekends, this stuff, but usually this stuff is coming from actual projects that we're doing. Now, I mean, we're all maybe in different situations. Myself as the individual company or consultant, I can learn whatever I want and it's kind of my time. But when I was FTE, I'm learning and I'm doing what the projects dictate, right? And I can learn stuff on the side, but I'm only going to be using the tooling that really is going to be essential to accomplishing the project or the goal. I think we're finding there's too much information. And the last point I'll say is, organizations are already behind before 2023. They're always behind the technology. I think we're seeing this larger gap now, which is going to make it much, much harder for someone who is FTE, who's not aware of these changes, to stay on even close to being on top of it. I don't know if that answers the question, but.
No, and so, yeah, it does. I think it's, to your point, Mike, I agree that But Microsoft's done the certification learning paths before. The problem with it is now that even we're done, none of it has what has been feature dumped in the last, what, 6 months or 3 months or what, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, I don't know how that evolves, but it probably has the same problem that everybody else does in that, like, oh my God, this bigot is just never stops. And it's a good thing, but also a challenging thing, I think, for not only those of us who try to keep up with it all versus periodically, right? And that's maybe the bigger problem. It's probably easier to keep up with it the way we do, where we're talking about all the stuff every 2 days a week, every mm-hmm. week, because imagine we take a couple months off. How do you grok that much information? You don't, you know? And that's where it's just like, man, like, hey, it's fun to be alive, but it's a lot of information and a lot of details that impact how organizations can implement solutions. I'll digress off of that.
One thing I will add to your point there, Seth, I think you're right. I mean, if you, Tommy, to your point, right? If you're in a company where you're focused and your head's down, like a majority of your time is kind of maintaining, building what is currently there. Where I think organizations are starting to get their head around this is like, okay, well, I think there's actually a question around what other things does Fabric offer me that can solve other pain points from across my company, right? Hey, I've got a whole bunch of JSON files that are just coming in from random API calls. What should we do with them, right? We have maybe we build some kind of process that works in store procedures today. Okay, well, what can we do tomorrow? Where does Fabric provide less friction around working with those files and those types? So it takes someone to say, it takes two parts of this, right? Someone has to sit down and say, I need to ask the question, and then you need to go find the answer, right? So if you don't know Fabric can solve that with notebooks or the lakehouse or what's going on there, you may have a conceptually what's going on, but you're not actually saying, okay, I can see the pain point and the problem in my organization, and then I can see the visibility to solve that problem inside Fabric. People will get there, but you actually did to do some research to get to that pattern. So I think maybe the MVP community, Seth and Tommy, to your points, right, is the MVP community should be saying, here are common patterns that you will find in your organization. If you're doing this, here's a good solution that would solve that. And maybe this is where the Fabric, it's called the task flows. Maybe mm-hmm. task flows can be part of that solution as we think about it, right? Hey, the API, table creation process, whatever that thing is, right? Here, you've got an API. Use this pipeline to connect to the API. Here's this storage account where you're going to put the raw JSON files. Oh, and here's another storage account, or here's another lakehouse where you're going to take those files and turn them into tables, right? So simple examples around that, I think, would be extremely helpful, because then people in organizations say, look, I've already got they know their problems. They know what's hard. They know what part of the data that they're trying to get access to. This is using like a SOAP API. Okay, how do I get it out of, I don't care where it comes from. Everyone just wants the data in the lakehouse in a table. That's what literally everyone wants that. That's the question. Yeah. Just give me the data and I'll figure it out from there.
And real quick on your point, because I feel like I have a pretty good question, but I think for the adoption's not going to be very natural progression. I think it's going to start with use cases, right? Like, because if your organization's not using Fabric, odds are you're not using Fabric. But to your point, Seth, there's probably, rather than this end-to-end solution that we're going to start with, it's probably going to be more situations like you just said, where we have all these JSON files or these raw files, and what do we do with this? Oh, you can do this in Fabric in this kind of minor or hyper situation. Probably makes a lot of sense. And I think that's where we're going to see, it's probably on the MVPs and consultants and I think the leaders in this community to kind of show the use cases rather than, hey, you're going to start with everything.
Yes.
Here's how you implement everything. No, it's going to start with these task flows. It's going to start with little projects.
Yes. And I think my point here is it's going to take time for people to absorb the technology, figure out, I see how the technology works, and I'm going to interpret between the technology solutions to what problems we actually have, and saying, okay, with everything, and especially now, there's like six ways to do the same thing, right? Hey, I want to load data to the lake. Well, I could go through a pipeline. I could go through a data flow. I could go through a notebook. Like, that's just three ways right there to get data into the lake. Which one's the best one? And Tommy, I was doing exactly this. Tommy and I were trying to collect YouTube analytics for the podcast and things, because we're just trying to like get our head around like what's our impact on the podcast, because that's what we have to do as an MVP. And so Tommy wrote this really great, you know, literally the M code is like 1,000 lines long on how to go talk to the API and get the data and parse it and then page through all the information. Data flows couldn't quite do it. Now, I wrote 3 cells inside notebooks, and it was going through, paging the data, making a data frame, and then write it to the lake. So I could do the same activity in a different pattern. It was more about like, okay, are we getting the right numbers? Is it coming back out right? So it's just very interesting to me that you can now solve the problem many different ways. And so it now becomes more of a, what skill set do you have and what can you use to solve the problems?
So I think that's actually a great segue to my question. And I'm going to preface this with, I'm going to say yes to this. And when we think about everything here, the last 9 years, so let's take the last 9 years as a BI professional. Part of what we do, and I think part of the real skill, the experience, is keeping on top of things and being experienced and talented with the new updates. In the past 9 years, the BI professional, is this the most difficult time in the last 9 years to be a BI professional?
I think, well, if you're using Microsoft tooling, like we're in that context.
Yeah,
because there was a comment otherwise, like we don't know what other companies are doing. But yeah, I mean, I think so. Just because the volume of information, right? And we talked about the spigot in the push down, but there's a part in here that further down that I agree with in Kurt. Shocker, I agree with something Kurt says. I'm on this. I agree it's hard, only because I believe it's extremely important for people to at least be aware of the changes. Mm-hmm. To expect everybody, and then, but the secondary point though is to expect everybody to take it to the levels that Tommy, you do, and Mike do, and where you're building videos and like you're already deep in the tool of Fabric and learning it all. Is everybody going to be there? No, right? Because,
right.
And this kind of came into our conversation. What are the FTE responsibilities? Well, they've got the stuff they've already built, plus development, plus all these things. A lot of the extra like things to be aware of fall into what Kurt also aligns, which is fantastic for organizations to always do, is keep a percentage of time allocated for R&D or enhancing your solutions.
Yes.
And while we're talking about the challenges of all these features, the mass benefit to organizations that leverage tools or this ecosystem like Power BI in an embedded scenario for customer facing, like I have my own dev team that's constantly building enhancements to my reporting tool. Right, I don't have to do the custom dev to everything. The only problem with it is I don't control the devs, so I don't know what's coming in as far as enhancements go. But at the same time, like, that's one of the huge benefits of using an ecosystem.
Yes,
with all these features coming, is if at least you're plugged into understanding what features are coming out. You may not know them all, but holy cow, do those come up in conversations? Like, when you're trying to solve the next problem for an organization, somebody's having a challenge with the current line chart. And you're like, because it's smoothing, you know, oh my gosh, like I've got a new one for you. It like, it just goes up and down and it looks like a column chart to some degree, man, like all of these things, if you're aware of, you can plug into and implement instantly just because you knew about them. Then you can learn the actual implementation parts.
Mike, what do you think? Do you think this is the most difficult time to be a BI professional in the past 9 years?
No, I wouldn't say that. I would say, I mean, again, if you're looking at things from like an IT perspective, right? So you could kind of figure out where this lands. What I think is happening is there is a BI professional in the business and there's a BI professional inside IT. And I kind of I use this data engineer term loosely because I really do feel like a lot of business users understand their data. They know how to merge it. They've built incredible things inside Excel, albeit I don't want to maintain them, but they're incredible. They do a lot of really rich things. There's huge things that are being built in the business because those are the only tools they were given. So I feel like the Venn diagram of what used to be business intelligence for the business side and business intelligence from the IT side, those two bubbles in the last couple of years have just overlapped more and more and more and more. And so I had an aha moment when I saw Power Query and said, oh, look, our business users can go create Power Query things and then hand that Power Query directly over to an IT group and say, look what I built. I built these tables and this is the step I did to transform the raw data into curated data. Now, whether that stays in Power Query, it goes into SQL, a pipeline, something else, maybe it's a notebook, I don't know. But to go back to another part of the team and say, look, this is what I built. I documented it very clearly in these steps. This is what is adding value to me. I can go from raw data to value for what I need. And there was tooling that was easy enough that I could click buttons and figure it out. I mean, the same thing goes for new users to Power Query, right? Mm. You're giving them this Power Query tool. They don't realize all the buttons and the bells and the whistles and the cleaning. You can really do a lot with it to clean data. So to me, like, I think it's actually not the hardest time. I think it's actually a very good time. What I really appreciate about this article, it gives you like very tangible points around how can you start small and continue to grow your knowledge. So to me, I like looking at the glass is half empty or full. What's the optimistic? Half glass is half full.
Half full.
No, the empty, half full. Yeah, so I like to think the glass is half full because I think, wow, I'm in a place where if anything I want to learn or if I want to dive deeper into any particular thing, all the knowledge that I'm gaining to myself is just making me more valuable, right? If I had to choose a person that did everything in Power Query versus I had a person who could do Power Query and pipelines and notebooks, I'm probably going to ask the person, that person is going to, I think, going to add more value to the organization because they know a little bit more about all the things.
So it's surprising to me, though, that you're, so I wouldn't say, if I'm going to say, is it the hardest time for BI? I think it's the most challenging for all of the things that you just said, Mike.
Yeah.
And especially around in an arena where the technologies were in a place where you had individual technologists, right, trying to solve solutions, curate data to provide to the business. It was very technology focused, which is also one of the problems with it, right? You weren't without the right frameworks. You had to wait a long time. The business still had to operate and there were challenges there. But those two areas that you just talked about with that overlap create some of the largest problems to solve within an organization, which is why we talk every Tuesday and Thursday, right? Like a ton of that is now it's merging the technology, like not merging. Yeah, to some degree. There are now new technologies on the business side. And then you're solving and rapidly growing in big data and cloud systems and all this stuff. And they're coming together. It's surprising that you're not saying like it is the most challenging. Plus, you're throwing in a ton of process and people conversation, which was never part of that before in terms of a clean delivery. I think because you're trying to push citizen developers, like your whole mantra here is I'm going to train business users. I'm going to pull more people into the technology realm. It's like, well, great. Yes. These tool sets allow us to do that, but we haven't even begun to solve. Like, what does that look like in an organization? How do you implement that successfully? What is the business intelligence? Like, what are we driving for? Like that is so relevant in the conversations that we have. It is a challenge. Well, anyway,
I don't think the challenge was any different.
Opportunity.
Than it was.
Maybe that's what you're saying.
So
it's just an opportunity.
That's how I'm looking at it, right? I'm looking at it going like, this is the proper growth story for Power BI. This is where we need to be going.
I'm not arguing that. I'm not suggesting that. I think I agree with you.
Yeah.
BI professional.
And I think to me, I'm looking at it going, I'm a very like, this is a great opportunity. Like anyone who wants to really take the initiative, you have, and like, I think substantially, if you get good at what you're doing in Fabric, you could literally make that your entire career of just doing that for people. And if that's what makes your gears move, your heart tick, whatever that, I think this is a great opportunity for you. So in that respect, I look at it, but I won't disagree with you. I agree with your statement, Seth, around there's a lot there. There is a whole lot more there at your fingertips. And I do think Microsoft is trying to make a lot of this experience, particularly around everything that's inside Fabric, it's trying to be more of that GUI or that user interface that's easy to use, clicking things. It's low code or no code solutions that they're trying to produce. And I think that's very wise. If you look at just some of the numbers, right, the volumes of data are ever increasing. It's getting larger and larger and larger every year. And it's like exponentially growing with video, bigger pieces of content, more JSON files. Everything's just getting more of those data pieces. So we're going to need better tools to handle more volumes of data. It's just going to be how it goes. So if you like this stuff, lean into it, get good at it.
I feel like you're missing a few words. It is a great opportunity for the enterprise, for the organization, but Mike, we know we're still teaching people Power Query and some people are still struggling. Again, think about the BI professional. We're one of, 180 MVPs who have to devote our time and love to devote our time to every nook and cranny.
We're very weird.
We're very weird. But how many people are BI professionals? It's a lot. And there is no expectation, or there should be no expectation, that you're going to be a master in data engineering, a master in Power BI and data visualization, and then also AI. That's not an expectation. To me, the hardest point of this is for the average BI professional, or for someone who wants to be a solid one, let me put it that way, just to be a quality BI professional, where do you devote your time extra outside and your skill set? Because it cannot be in all of this. You may dabble in all of this. And again, this is only if your resources are available. Some organizations don't allow even what's available in Power BI.
So that's a different question, I think. I think there's two parts to your question. One of them is, does it make sense for me to, do I become a mile wide and an inch deep, right? If I try to learn all the things and be an expert in all of it, which you can't. You can't really hone in on an area and go deep on a particular topic. However, what I would argue, though, is, yes, I agree with you there. But as you increase the surface area of the tool, there's not enough. You can't assume one person at your organization is going to do all the things.
They already
at some point. Well, they do now, but we've been very clear in communicating. There's definitely distinct roles around. I'm the report developer. I'm a data modeler. I'm the data engineer. I definitely think there's more hats, and you can have someone who wears a lot of those hats. You better be ready to pay top dollar for someone who wears all the hats. But I think you should, as an organization, start thinking about distributing that knowledge across two or three, or thinking about, and this is where I think your point, Seth, earlier was, we need to have more of the conversations around, as an organization, what do we value? How we're getting things done? The people in the process, this tooling is accelerating those conversations faster, I think. And so you can't expect one person to know everything. What I do feel like is interesting here is a lot of this stuff is valuable. And if you find yourself gravitating towards notebooks, learn those, get good at that, because that is a valued skill set across your team. You're going to need someone who's really good at that stuff. Or if you're really good at using Power Query, that's great too. Dive deep there. And to me, there's like a lot of opportunities of what is your thing that you really enjoy. I love making reports. I'm building great visuals. I'm thinking about the UI, the UX experience. If that's your thing, dive and push into those things, because you're part of a team that all do different things. Or you should be thinking that way, at least.
Well, I think the way I think about this is there are more opportunities that are being presented to people that normally would not have them, because the ecosystem for the entirety of this stack is now available to business users. So if you started, even to Mike, to your point, right? If someone is starting in Power Query in Excel and they're learning about Power BI and then they're open to the Fabric ecosystem, can they learn all these other things? Yes. Never before, I think, has any system been so available for people to learn. That's exciting. People should look at that and go, I can, me personally, increase my value as a technologist, or as a business intelligence professional, as an analyst, as a whatever, to get to the next level. I can learn these things if I want to, because those doors are open. That is different than saying there's an expectation for someone who has learned Power BI in the last 2 years to understand what that system even looks like, right? I think we're uniquely positioned because we bring a lot of all of those business intelligence aspects and building all these frameworks in small, medium, large organizations. That fabric makes a ton of sense to us because these are all components of services we've been using for a really long time. And our gripe is, I can use this service. I don't have that feature yet, right? Like, so I recognize that a lot of those conversations, I think it's also easy for us to fall into a trap where, because it's a natural conversation, we are familiar with these platforms, that a lot of the audience is not, and they don't know, right? So I guess that's the distinction I make. There are opportunities. We've proven, and Microsoft has shown many times, that there are paths to elevate your career if you want to choose them.
Correct.
Does it mean that you have to learn it all? And I think that is absolutely not.
I'd agree.
Does understanding the capabilities, like, I know I can do this thing, so keep up to date, you know, around the features and things like that, I think that is important. I think it is, because that becomes part of the conversation. And it also stretches your imagination, right? Our creativity episode. When I get into these creative states where I'm going to build the next new thing, I know I have all these net new, like, features that I can implement or talk about as an FTE. Where this separates slightly is in the consulting realms, where it's more relevant for both of you to not only understand the feature, but know how to implement it, right? Because your next customer might be right around the corner, right? And they need, like, that is their start of their implementation, or they are going to revamp things, and that's why they're reaching out to you. So your chances of implementing a new feature faster, I think, are much more possible than where an organization is going to say, oh yeah, just whip out the new feature because it's cool. You know, it's like, yep. No, what's the business value? Why am I investing so much time, not necessarily on a new build, but on a refactor of something?
And right? That's the
application of all of this constant stream in those directions that I think is relevant.
I think that's the most difficult thing, right? Where, I mean, the last 12 months, the amount of time and research and practices and applications I've done around Fabric, and also like prompt engineering and AI. I mean, there's probably times I've come up to the office and asking my son, how old are you now? Like, okay, like, you know, is it your birthday yet? And then go back downstairs. To me, I think the hardest question that we're all going to be asking, and I think organizations are going to be asking of people, I think, kind of to your point, is, if I were to say I'm a Power BI expert or champion, right? There's already the assumption of the skills that I have: Power Query, semantic models, being able to share, visualization, DAX. But if I'm saying I'm a Fabric expert, right? Like, I mean, what's the expectation? And I think that's very gray right now. I mean, my edge that I've always really kind of prided myself on is my war chest of any situation going, oh, we could take a little of this technology and this process. With Fabric now, I mean, it's becoming like a Mary Poppins bag where you're like, hold on, let me search through here. And it's a much, much deeper, this war chest, right? And I think that's, to me, where when I say this is the hardest time to be a BI professional is, for an FTE, it's, okay, I could know notebooks, but that's not going to be universal around every organization like Power Query is with Power BI. And as a consultant, right, it's like, well, I have no choice but to become an expert and skilled and willing to pay myself for each of these services. And I think those are kind of the two splits that I see. Now, I personally enjoy this, but I think organizations, I hope, really define those roles. But I don't know if that goes to your point, but I really like, in terms of just like, where from an FTE's point of view, or from the BI professional's point of view, like, what's the universal crossover skill and where do you devote that time?
That's the same as like some of the conversation we had in the Matrixes, right?
Yeah.
And we're touching a little bit on, like Mike said, a mile wide and an inch deep versus very deep. Mm-hmm. I think it's a choice. You can be very successful in both, right? Like, does it interest you to understand the dynamics of like a full picture? I'm much more of a full picture thinking guy. Yeah. Periodically, there are like I really want to dive deep. But when I dive deep, how deep do you go? Right? Like, there are, you can compare yourselves to people like the Italians who like deep DAX modeling, semantic model, like that's the abyss, right? Like, how do I want to go down 100 feet or 200 feet? You know, like, and I think that's driven by like interest areas. I guess we're running out of time. So my final thoughts would be this. I do think it's very important to keep up to date on the features. Does it mean you have to understand them fully? No, but you're cataloging or maybe cataloging the actual feature in a location where you can search for things as you're going to go on. I think you're going to naturally, as an FTE, learn new features as you're working on different projects, right? So all of a sudden, I can apply this thing I heard about in my next project. I would also encourage people to learn or dive a little bit deeper on those features that interest you. Right? Because ultimately, those interest things should align with where you want to head with your career. And I'm a huge proponent of having an idea or consistent learning to advance yourself above and beyond where you're at. Right? Mm-hmm. I think if I look in totality at my career, it's when I stopped looking at it like I owed the company something to. This is a relationship between me and a company. I'm providing the services, and the more I know and the more effective I can become, the more valuable I am. It's not a job hopping thing. It's
correct.
Am I increasing in value as an individual in this industry? And when you invest that time, and it hopefully it's in the things you enjoy doing, there you reap the benefits always. So like Dory, just keep swimming, right? Like, this doesn't have to be a monumental thing. Keep the feature updates, bare minimum. Just keep them in, be cognizant of things, learn things as they come. We're all busy. We all have crazy things going on. And there's going to be a pattern. Sometimes you learn more, sometimes you learn less. Just keep up to date, though.
I'd agree with that one. Tommy, any final thoughts as we kind of wrap here?
Yeah, wrote a few notes. I think just taking our whole conversation, by the way, really enjoyed this conversation. I think time management is never going to be more important. And I think they're actually more than that. Probably the most important thing is the core skills. They're not going to change, and really kind of implementing that. Maybe it expands a bit, but core training, core skills has never been more important. And then I'm going to introduce an acronym, LAG. Learn as you go. There's probably going to be a lot of stuff that I think is going to be dependent on the project you're introduced. But I think stay solid in the core skills. You have to. That's not going to change. Semantic models still going to be here. And just take the different situations. What you know is like, hey, can we do notebooks? That would be really helpful. Great. Do you know it? Not yet. And go run with it.
I'm going to kind of wrap my final thoughts here. And I like the end of what Kurt was talking about. And he talks a lot about the beginning of the article. Like, here's a bunch of things that are potentially overwhelming. And the key bullet points here, I like it. Reframe your context. Good thoughts around that one. Make small and prioritized learning exercises. You know, what do you need to learn next? I had someone at the Microsoft Fabric conference said, look, our data flows were getting slow and falling over. And we went over to notebooks and it started running faster. And we were able to do more things with more data. And he's like, when do I know I need to move from data flows to notebooks? I was like, you already figured it out. Like, when it falls over and it doesn't do what you want and you're running out of capacity, that's the time to think about another solution. So like, it's, yeah, what Alex, we all know there are things in data flows that don't quite do as well as we can in notebooks, Alex. Those are fighting words. However, there are moments in time where you do a solution in something and you start hitting what you feel like are the edges or the boundaries of that thing. And then it, to your point, Seth, earlier, it's very good to make sure you have understanding of where do you go next? what should be the next thing to kind of, you need to have a little bit of general knowledge about things, and then you can push in a little bit harder there. I like the idea of getting dedicated time for your organization. If you can, spend some time on that. If your organization doesn't do that, I'm going to say it, maybe it's time for a new organization, or you have to spend time in the evenings to kind of get that in your experience. I will agree with this one. Attending conferences, we haven't had good conferences for a while, especially around the Power BI thing. I felt like the Fabric conference was a very technical conference, lots of good details, lots of sessions around very technologically sound things. That's a great place to go learn. And usually there's a bunch of like use cases, how we built it, other experts in the community showing you what is possible. So I think that's another thing that's really important here, is to get into a community, a user group, something online, follow a podcast that might be named Explicit Measures that talks about hard things that you may want to get involved with. Like those are areas where you need other people that are working on hard things around you, because you don't know what you don't know. But working other people are figuring things out, learn from them. I think that's one of the things I really love about our community, is there's a lot of people trying to figure out how to make this work and work well. So listen to the community, find people or experts in the community that you like to follow, listen to what they're saying, evaluate their thoughts against what you think and what you find is real in your organization, because that will likely determine, hey, I can trust these people. They actually do know what they're talking about. They're saying good things that resonate with me. They're saying things that solve my problems. Therefore, I can probably trust them. So it's getting yourself in knit communities that help out with that as well. Anyways, I will say that. Thank you all very much. We appreciate everyone's time here today. Thank you so much for listening to us. Great conversation. Wonderful in the chat. Even if Alex thinks I limit Power BI and Power Query a little bit by M, we'll have to talk about that one offline. That being said, we really appreciate your listenership here. If you wouldn't mind, please share this with somebody else. We really like to have this out to the community. We think this is valuable. If you found value from it, someone else might find value as well. So please share it if you don't mind. Tommy, where else can you find the podcast?
And Alex, real quick, for the record, the YouTube API Power Query, 4.5 minute refresh. So Alex, good. So you can find us on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. Make sure to subscribe and leave a rating. It helps us out a ton. If you have a question, an idea, or a topic that you want us to talk about in a future episode, head over to powerbi.tips/podcast. Leave your name and a great question. Finally, join us live every Tuesday and Thursday, 7:30 a.m. Central, and join the conversation on all of Power BI Tips' social media channels.
Excellent. Thank you all so much, and we'll see you next time.